Okay, I want to pull up my quote here today. Here is a quote that I really love. This was spoken not too long ago. The children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. Have any of you heard that quote before? And any of you know who spoke that quote? Socrates. 2,400 years ago. When we speak in this church and we say that we are a powerfully intergenerational church, I want you to know what this means. We live in a day and an age of polarization. It is super easy for us to be polarized politically, and the Republicans can go to that corner, and the Democrats can go to that corner, and the Libertarians can go to that corner, and the Independents can go to that, and then we'll all take rocks and throw at each other and shout and call each other's names. Welcome to American politics. But that's not the only place. We're polarized economically, and we find that there is a growing disparity between our economic brackets, and the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And we absolutely see the reality of that in Spearfish in the Northern Hills. And wherever you're visiting from today, if you're looking, you're going to see it in your hometown also. But it's not just there. We see it in our relationships, and we see it in our educational levels, and we see it in so many ways, and we see it generationally. This is incredibly important to realize. We see the differences, the polarization, in our generations. Exactly what Socrates was talking about as he was complaining about that darn next generation. And 2,400 years later, here we are. Oh, well, is there a way to deal with that? Is there a way to combat that? Is there a way that we can move away from that? Absolutely. It's about blessing. This is the gift that I want to give you today. It's the concept of blessing. And let me begin by giving you this image. Within this last decade, there was a college graduation out on the East Coast. There was a lovely young Jewish girl who graduated from college. And on that day, her grandfather, an elder in their synagogue, came to that graduation. The family sat in this huge auditorium up in the balcony. And the grandfather wanted to sit down as close to the edge of the balcony as they could. And the commencement proceeded, and then came the time of graduation, and all the graduates stood up and lined up. And you know how this is from the graduations you've been at. They're all in order alphabetically, and you know the next name, the next name, the next name. When his granddaughter came to be the next person in line, this grandfather, this dignified, bearded Jewish elder, stood. And when his granddaughter's name was spoken, he said not a word, but simply raised his arms. She knew where her family was sitting. He saw her, and she saw him. And in that moment was a moment of blessing. As this grandfather passed on to this lovely granddaughter the love and the approval. This was a blessing of approval. But I want you to see something. A blessing is not just one way. It can be, and many blessings are, but blessings most often are two directional. He blessed her with a blessing of approval, but she blessed him with a blessing of fulfillment. She had finished what she had set out to accomplish. This was the blessing. This was the blessing. Now, come with me into this gospel lesson today. You know that there is a huge, huge difference between the gospel according to Matthew and the gospel according to Luke. Matthew was a book written by a Jewish man to a Jewish audience. Luke was written by a Gentile man to a Gentile audience. Their interpretations were very, very different of the whole birth story. In Matthew, the angel came to Joseph in a dream. In Luke, the angel came to Mary. In Matthew, we saw wise men following a star. In Luke, we saw shepherds following the angels. In Matthew, following the birth, we see Mary and Joseph and Jesus fleeing down into Egypt, escaping Herod, away from Jerusalem. But in Luke, we find Mary and Joseph and the baby going to Jerusalem for Jesus' circumcision. This was a very, very important ritual. It was also following the ritual of cleansing. Remember that in the Jewish tradition, it was that cleanliness and cleansing were incredibly important. And so after a birth, and you know how messy births are, they're a horrible mess. And out of that horrible mess comes this beautiful child. But there comes a time of cleansing where the Jewish tradition in those days said, now you go to the rabbi and you are blessed so that you can be cleansed again. And with this comes the circumcision of this little baby boy. And so into the temple they went. Matthew is telling the story in a powerful and amazing way, very carefully and very meticulously, choosing every story and every word. Luke is telling the story in an incredible and different way, very carefully choosing every story and every word. What was it? This is not a random story that we heard today. And after that week, on the eighth day, they circumcised Jesus and he came into the temple. There he was met, they were met by an old man whose name was Simeon. Simeon had been told that he would see the Christ. Now, are you ready for this? Because this is going to bend your brain a little bit. We as Christians interpret that there was one Christ. Because in our eyes and in our faith, there was only one Christ. That word Christ meant Messiah, the anointed one, the deliverer. We look at that from a spiritual point of view, not the Jewish population 2,000 years ago. They had been under Roman rule since the year 63 BCE, and they didn't like it. They wanted out from under it. They wanted independence. And in order to be independent of the Roman government, you had to have a leader rise up and become a military leader so that the Romans could be thrown off. That leader was called the Christ. We know in history that there were at least 19 recorded Christs, messiahs, anointed ones, military leaders who were going to rise up. And this happened time and time and time again inside of Jewish history. These leaders would rise up, they would form a military corps, they would put together a force, and they would take on the Romans head on. And every single time the Romans, the most powerful and amazing military unit the world had ever seen, every single time they came in and they crushed the Messiah. And their favorite way of doing that was identifying who was that anointed one and putting him on a cross, including Jesus. When Simeon was in the temple that day, he had been told by God in his own vision that he would not die until he had seen the Messiah, the Christ. He was not expecting a baby. What he, in his own imagination, most likely would have been expecting was a tall man in armor, in military, with followers who were ready to claim the power and the presence of God to throw the Romans off. He was expecting a handshake, not holding a little beady baby. How big would Jesus have been at that moment? 5 pounds? 6 pounds? 7 pounds? I don't know. But I will tell you, this was not what Simeon was expecting. And what did Simeon do? It doesn't tell us how Simeon knew this, but he knew it. And he took that baby boy and he blessed that child. And Mary and Joseph were amazed. Seriously? A complete stranger walks up to you of all places in the temple, in God's holy temple, and takes your child and blesses this child? And as if that wasn't enough, Simeon hands Jesus back to his parents. Mary carries him even further into the temple, and they are met by an old woman. Fascinating. This woman, her name was Anna, was 84 years old. I don't think that the number 84 was specifically important, but what I do know is this. What they were trying to communicate was that this woman was ancient. She was as old as dirt. Now, in our society today, there are 84-year-olds who are here today. And what I know is that the 70, 80, 90, and 100-year-olds in our congregation and in our communities, you're at the top of your game. Because our life expectancies have changed. In Jesus' day, if you were up in the lower economic class, if you were where Mary and Joseph were, the poor of the poor, a woman's average life expectancy, ready for this? 35 years. 35. Why? Childbearing. Childbearing was the most dangerous thing that you could do. And there was no birth control. If you were going to have children, you were going to continue to have children. 5 children, 10 children, 15 children. And every time, every birth was a deep, deep risk to your life. 35 years. And so here is this mother, Mary, who was very, very likely 14, 15 years old, holding her firstborn, and this woman that Mary would have seen as ancient, came up to her and held Jesus and blessed him. Do you remember in your life when an elder blessed you? Let me tell you, there is a power in the blessing of elders. There's a power in the blessing of elders. Now, when Simeon held Jesus, when Anna held Jesus, do you think that Jesus was the only one who was blessed? No. Simeon was blessed because he got to hold this child he had been waiting for, even though it came in a different package than he was expecting. Anna was blessed because she got to see and to hold this child. Mary was blessed. Joseph was blessed simply because these two elders chose to bless this child. Blessing, blessing, blessing. Why do you think this story is in the Bible? It is a powerful story of blessing. All right, let's begin to weave this then into our own lives. I want to tell you two stories. The first one is a little bit longer, and the second one is a little bit shorter. 26 years ago, my daughter Grace was 2 years old. I was preaching in Wessington Springs, and on that Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, I was on for preaching at the nursing home. We lived 6 blocks away, and so I put my guitar in the wagon, and I put my Bible in the wagon, and I put my 2-year-old daughter in the wagon, and we trundled on down 6 blocks to the nursing home, and this is where the experiment began. I took Grace into the dining room where worship was to be held. And as I was beginning to set up, to get the altar set up and to get my guitar out and to prepare to preach, I took that 2-year-old and I put her down and turned her loose. Didn't tell her anything, just set her out. Now, Grace has been since minute one an extrovert. So I knew this was not a problem. This kid was designed for this. Just turn her loose and see what happens. Fascinating. That room was filled with 40, 50 people, some of them residents in wheelchairs, some of them residents in chairs, others were family members who were standing around and sitting and talking, and so many people. You've seen this how many times? Maybe you're the one that's done this. You see a toddler that is loose and on their own, and you just reach out with your arms and say, in your best baby talk voice, "Oh, hi, sweetie. Come here, sweetie. Come on." You know, this was exactly what happened. How many people in that dining room that day were reaching out and talking in their 2-year-old language? But fascinatingly, Grace would have none of it. She, within 2 minutes, gravitated to the one person in that room who had the highest gifts and skills for children, Dorothy Salmon. Oh, I wish you could have known Dorothy Salmon. She was amazing. She had moved into the nursing home just a little bit before I had arrived to town, and at that point, she was a spry 93. She was part of an extended farming family, and she and her husband had not had children. She had been the beloved aunt in that entire extended family, and she loved children. Oh my goodness, she was amazing with kids, but had never had her own children. So therefore, every kid in the community was hers. She sat in her wheelchair and watched Grace. All of these people around who were talking to her in 2-year-old language. Instead, Dorothy waited until Grace came up to her, and she said, "Well, hello. You must be Grace." And then she helped Grace climb on her lap. And those two began to have a conversation. Where did that come from? They tell me that little children have the ability to see auras about people, that they can sense very, very deeply and very sincerely what adults are like. Who are the mean ones and who are the loving ones? And with 50 people in the room, Grace walked right up to Dorothy and wound up on her lap. I want to tell you about the blessing of that day. 91 years of difference between those two lovely, lovely ladies. Grace, all of her life, has had a deep ability to be with elders. Now, what we know is that part of that is just innate. It's a gift that she was born with. But I all of a sudden realize that one of the reasons that she is so good at this, that this is so marvelous, is because she was blessed by Dorothy. Dorothy, on that day, taught my 2-year-old daughter what it meant that it was safe to come up into the lap of a 93-year-old, that it was safe to talk to someone in a nursing home. Grace has never been intimidated at all by any of the details inside of elder care. She loves it. Why? You know what? I think it was because Dorothy blessed her. And what I also know that day is that Grace blessed Dorothy. That's the first story. Do you see the power of blessing? The power of blessing. Second story. It was about 5 years ago that Colleen and I grabbed the church van, and we grabbed a bunch of the college kids, and we went up to Medora in North Dakota. There's a musical up there that we wanted to see. We had so much fun on the trip up. And as part of that trip, we were going to eat in one of the Medora restaurants. Medora is a tourist town that is owned by the Theodore Roosevelt Foundation. And what that means is that they own the whole nine yards, and they hire all the people that work in every store. And what that means is that if you are a young adult who has been hired by the Theodore Roosevelt Foundation in the town of Medora, you go work where they tell you to work. Today, you are going to the ice cream shop. Tomorrow, you are going to go over to the elevator, or to the escalator. The next day, you're going to be working downtown. Wherever it is that they tell you that you are working, that's where you're going to go. So we went to one of the restaurants. Oh my goodness, I think that to this day, that meal holds the record for the worst service that I have ever had in my entire life. It was horrendous, and immediately, it took time for us to be seated, and then it took forever for a server to come. When our waiter came, I recognized immediately that this was a fish who was out of water. He was a young man about 21 years old with an Eastern European accent. Uh-oh. And it was really obvious, really fast, that he didn't know what he was doing. As we looked around, what we discovered was that nobody knew what they were doing. I don't know what happened, but what I do know is that they had lost their entire staff. They had replaced the entire staff, and this was like the first day when the new staff was in and on the job. And so they eventually took our orders, and then what we figured out was that they didn't just replace the wait staff, they had replaced the cooks. And the meals started coming back, and the meals were not right. There was one meal on the entire table that was right. And we waited and we waited, and a meal would come here, and then a meal would come there, and then a meal would come here, and then we'd send back the meal, and then we decided, no, don't send back the meal. We might be here till next Wednesday. And my meal finally came. I was the last, and it wasn't even close to right. But be darned if I was going to send it back, because I was hungry and we were late, and so we ate it. What do you think I did with the tip that night? You know what? I came to a decision. We decided early on that we better just laugh about this and make the most of it, because the servers were the same ages as the kids that we had brought up. This was their peer group. And it was important to make this a good experience. I decided that night that server, that 21-year-old with an Eastern European accent, was going to get one heck of a big tip. Because what I knew was that nobody else was going to give him a tip that night. And what I decided was that if I were in his shoes, I recognized very, very quickly that he was learning as quickly as he could. He was doing the best that he could. He just wasn't good at it yet. But what he needed was at least one tiny word of encouragement. That boy needed a blessing. And although it wasn't a huge tip, but it was a good tip. And I know it didn't change the whole night for him. But it was so important to have that moment to say, I choose to bless. I choose to bless. This is what I want you to see. If we want in our lives to stick by and do the words that Socrates used, these kids these days, we can do that. If you choose to complain, and I want you to hear this carefully, if we choose to complain about the new generation, the next generation, we can do that. But do you know, of course you know, that the next generation is complaining about the older generation. Every generation complains about the ones that are before it and behind it. The most powerful ways that I've seen younger generation bless, oh my goodness, third graders, fourth graders, fifth graders, eighth graders, ninth graders, high schoolers, college. Have you ever been in the position where you can't figure out your computer and what you need is a fifth grader? And that fifth grader comes over to your house and says, Here's the on switch. Here's how you do it. And they bless. And they bless. Blessings go both ways. It's not just oldest to youngest. It's youngest to oldest also. We bless each other. This is what I want you to intentionally choose this week. How is it that you can bless someone else of a different generation because they need your blessing? We live in a polarized time, in a time when it's too easy to complain about anything and everything that's out there because we are so separated from each other. This week, I want to invite you to not be separated. I want to invite you to step in closer and to bless. Because that's what it takes to live as community. That's what it takes to live with generation to generation. This is what it means to be powerfully intergenerational. We bless each other. That's what it's about. And I think that's why Simeon and Anna are in here. To teach us about blessing. May it be this week that you choose to bless. Amen. Would you pray with me? So, Lord of love and Lord of life, we give you thanks even for those people that are a pain in the neck. We give you thanks this day for those people that we just can't understand. We give you thanks for those people who are just so different. Lord, teach us how to understand and to bless. Even in the face of frustration, Lord, teach us to bless. As you have blessed us, so teach us to bless others in Christ's name. Amen.